I work in South Park, a recently posh neighborhood between downtown and the new ballpark. A lawyer moved into the luxury condos down on the nearby waterfront about 2 years ago, and now he calls himself a community activist. He's running for district supervisor, and posters bearing his name, Sweet, appear in the windows up and down the park. This boyish-looking blonde guy pledges to help the remnants of the tech boom years take their neighborhood back. But take it back where? The legacy of this tiny neighborhood is of working-class immigrants, residential hotels, and empty lots. Originally, the designer and builder of South Park intended it to be a 19th-century version of a gated community, but the rich whites soon fled to Nob Hill when they couldn't lock their streets away from the Filipino, Chinese, Japanese, and other immigrants who were settling in the south of Market. I work in the last remaining SRO, that means a single resident occupancy, also known as a residential hotel, and it's the last one on the park. Stuck behind case management files in the basement, I found wrinkled copies of historical photos of the neighborhood. One dated 1924 showed the block crammed with laundries, pharmacies, liquor stores, and hotels. In a promotional booklet published for the nonprofit that owns and runs our building, there's another photo from the 70s of a faded, crumbling, yellow-gated facade. This was the before picture of our hotel, which has been rehabilitated so successfully that it's almost indistinguishable from the high-cost lofts that have gone up next door. Some tenants in our hotel were the original organizers who made these buildings livable. They formed one of the first SRO tenant unions in the city. It was, they tell me, the fixing up of our hotels that made South Park the ideal spot for San Francisco's wave of redevelopment in the 80s. Now it's all for the ballpark and for the people in the luxury towers rising along Brannan Street. Tenants tell me that in the 60s and 70s, this was the place to score. They warn me to look out for needles in the grass. All the history I learn about this place is told in fragments, in the small judgments of the old-timers, or in the wide-sweeping ones of the people who got here so recently. The sweet signs describe this moment of the park's history. So do the daily sweeps the cops make in the scraggly south end of the park to clear out a group of old-timers who still hang out and play dominoes. 100 or so old-timers and their subsequent generations showed up one Saturday for a South Park reunion barbecue, reclaiming its now manicured lawns for an afternoon, just to remember when this was their spot. The resident manager of our hotel remembers visiting her grandfather in this same building where we now work, back in the before years. Back then, her grandmother lived above the wash and dry, down the block on 3rd Street. Now, well-pressed people on lunch breaks cruise around the park in their convertibles looking for parking. Women in high heels guide small dogs, holding their leashes tightly. Poodles and greyhounds chase each other across the grassy parts of the park. Men whose button-down shirts and khakis are a size too snug, and they laugh loudly with coffee in hand and never go to lunch on their own. It turns out Sweet is going to lose this election, probably because hardly any of these people with the signs actually live here. Most of those lofts and condos sit empty. The night of the election, I ride my bike to a bar in the Tenderloin. In the rest of the city, a battle's coming to a head. There's a proposition on the ballot to take assistance away from homeless people and make it look like progress. It's called Proposition N, and it's dubbed Care Not Cash by its author, a golden boy politician, test running his mayoral campaign. A few folks who worked on the No On End campaign are already there, on their first drink and nervous, but hopeful. We sit and mingle and yell over loud music, although there isn't much to talk about yet. More people arrive and the gossip doesn't sound so good. Voter turnout is low, but the polls are running out of ballots in the Mission, Tenderloin, and Excelsior, some of the city's poorest neighborhoods. But early returns are heavily in favor of Prop N. It's still early enough to discount rumors and hold out for solid numbers. I glimpse up at the TV hanging behind the bar, waiting for some change to drop. The newscaster is interviewing Gavin Newsom, the poster boy politician for Prop N. The Prop N party on the TV is a big celebration, balloons and confetti floating down from the ballroom ceiling, champagne on trays. Gavin looks tired, haggard from this giant party that's surrounding him. He rubs his hand in this determined, sincere way and says, "It's time to get to work. Start taking care of people." As our night at the bar grows increasingly grim, some part of me wants to believe his line. A tiny corner of my brain tries desperately to agree, yeah, he was going to use that money to help people. It takes effort to always disbelieve so many lies. The people of this city do not want to act bad. An older woman at the bar named Regina leans towards me. When they learn what they have voted for, they will be pissed off. She is solid and smiles widely, points ferociously at the television. If this was meant to be, then we just need to keep speaking the truth about it. She's a founding member of a group that has been organizing welfare workers and other poor folks for the last 5 years. God has this all in his plan, she says. I don't believe in any God, but Regina's words are the only ones that make any sense out of the election. Is it surprising that people go for it when a politician tells them what they wish was true? But where, after all this so-called reform, can poor people fall to now? This night, it feels like we are on the last edge of the continent, on the dying tide of urban conscience. There are no one-way tickets out of here. I put my faith in the folks in the park, who had to move to distant corners of the city or away altogether, but come back to feel the sense of their place and history here in South Park. It's the working-class Filipino families who still bring their kids up to the playground, and those guys playing dominoes. They all look to cops and cafe-goers like they're just waiting to be shooed away. But they aren't fooled into that. These are the people of this street and of this town, and they don't go away.